Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You can give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, episode number 118, well into our syndication bit. I am Marty Plum. On the other line is Mr. Tony D. Viss. Mr. Viss, how is your fine Sunday afternoon going, my friend?
We are in the upper 40s here in Iowa on February 2nd, so it's going well. How about you?
Same. I think I haven't been outside since yesterday afternoon. You know, without coaching, it is crazy. Yesterday, this is almost embarrassing to admit, from 5:30 to 11:30, me and my wife and our son binge watched Community on Peacock. I think we cranked out like conservatively 10 episodes and maybe closer to 11 or 12. And finally, I can't do this anymore. I just got to go, you know, so. But we are recording this Sunday afternoon, February the 2nd. We were going to do this later on, but Tony has accommodated my basketball viewing schedule. So thank you very much, sir. I want to say that publicly. We also want to say publicly thank you to our sponsor, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, All American Used Cars and Trucks. Want to thank Juan Carlos, want to thank Esmeralda for all of their generosity towards a pen and a napkin and the coaching staff. Tony, episode 118, we are getting close to, I think we started this little bit around number 30, let's say. So we're closing it. We're gonna have to figure out a new introduction, but we still got a couple of months to do that. A quarterback here, pretty good quarterback, Omaha! Peyton. Yeah, Peyton Manning, and one of the best baseball players of our youth, Mr. Daryl Strawberry. What could have been in his career, you know? I've got two basketball players, both post players, one Hall of Fame coach, one Hall of Fame player.
I'm going to go with Don Nelson.
That is incorrect. Sorry, you caught me in the middle of a drink. That is incorrect.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah.
Shoot. The only other one I could think, maybe Lenny Wilkins?
That is incorrect.
18 is not my lucky number. Yeah. Really.
Dave Cowens.
I was close. Don Nelson was a Celtic. I was close.
Yeah, you were close. I think, hold that thought on Don Nelson. I haven't looked, but hold that thought for, I don't know, a week. I think we might be right there, Tony.
Okay. I'll hang on so for a week.
And then the Zen Master, Phil Jackson.
Jackson?
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have got there. I mean, he was a good player, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I would have got there with 18 with Phil.
Yeah. And then
that surprised me with Phil's personality, kind of quirky, and 18 is kind of a quirky number for basketball. So it's what it works.
Well, didn't like Dave Cowens at one point in his career just kind of quote unquote retired in the middle of the season and then decided to drive a cab for like 6 weeks or 2 months and then, you know, came back. So, you know. Dave Cowens is a bit quirky himself, I guess, if that's the phrase we want to use. So,
yeah. I did not know that he was a cab driver.
Yeah. You know, back when cabs were a legit thing, the only source of transportation that you had, you know, in the car other than buses, you know, so... all right, let's jump into it, Tony. It is late January, early February, and we are headed into what I call disruption season by various different names. This is the time of year where most coaches, if you're going to start hearing stuff, this is when you start hearing it. Whether that is stuff about discipline, stuff about kids talking about transferring, kids frustrated and they say they're going to quit or they're not going to go out next year. Sometimes, you know, we're at the peak of cold and flu season. So sometimes it's illness that is a disruption. Obviously, injuries are something that we all have to deal with as coaches of any sport. This is, you know, I know for me, Tony, this was always, as I became more seasoned and experienced, this is where my antenna really went up. Not to say that it wasn't up all the time, but it really went up around this time of year with these type of disruptions.
Yeah, this is the time of the year, like you said, transfer, injury, illness, all those things come into play. And this is the time of the year when you probably can least afford it. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day and just, you know, said, you know, January just seems like the month that never ends. You know, we practice or had a scrimmage, something like that on January 1. And then obviously January 31 was Friday. We practiced that day as well. And then we played yesterday. And it was amazing, you know, when I got up yesterday and you can see the calendar turn over and you're looking at February. And I remember being a varsity coach. That was just one of those things that when you got to February, you're like, oh, finally we got, you know, tournament pairings are on the, you know, on the docket coming up, and it just kind of that breath of fresh air. But it's also where you kind of wait for that other foot to fall as well. You know, what can go wrong? Because this is time of the year where you don't want anything to go wrong. And unfortunately, Murphy's Law kind of comes into play.
Yeah. And this is, you know, I want to be clear with our topic of the week for our listeners. This is not all just, you know, the typical what we complain about the most, the parent-driven stuff, you know, different things like that. There's a lot of different things. You know, a player gets caught cheating on a test and they're suspended for a game, or they've got to miss X amount of practices because of your school discipline policy, or you have a good conduct violation in the form of, let's say, a kid gets caught at a beer bash or you know, all of those different things. So a lot of our disruptions come from our parents, you know, a little bit of our disruptions from time to time come from administration, but also there's all these other disruptions. And I think that's, you know, you have to prepare for that. And there's nothing worse when, and I'm sure you've been there, Tony, that AD knocks on your door. Hey, we got to talk about Billy. Yeah, we just found out that, you know, and blah, blah, blah on down the line. Those are the ones that are just kind of a gut punch, because, you know, the odds are you're probably going to deal with the parental stuff, the playing time stuff. But when this kind of stuff happens, I think one of the biggest things is you just have to prepare yourself for it, that it very well could happen to you.
Yeah, it's not a case of, probably if. It's more a case of when. Everybody goes through injuries. Everybody goes through illness. We don't have a ton of guys in the sophomore team, but there were 2 days this week where we had 11. And so we had influenza going through our team or different things like that. So I had to reach out to the JV. The coaches up there were gracious enough to send, 10, 15 guys down and go against them. But yeah, there's a variety of things that you got to work on. And, we're at an age that's a very transforming age for kids, and sometimes they don't make the best decisions, whether that's cheating or doing something they shouldn't be doing on the weekend or whatever the case may be. And so if you can have a plan in place, maybe a few different plans in place, rather than being in reaction mode, you're in being a little bit more proactive, it sure does help quite a bit more.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the things, Tony, that's one of the things I had written down, and let's just lead off with that on the strategies to help coaches with this. You can't run from the disruptions. I think you got to deal with it head on. If you try to sweep it under the rug, if you try to ignore it, if you try this, that, the other thing, I think you've already have one problem, and if you try to run from it, I think that's going to create 2, 3, 4, 5 other problems.
Yeah, I call that the ostrich mentality. When bad things are going around, an ostrich, they stick their head in the ground. And as a coach, you can't do that. You have to face it head on. And one of the things that I think as a coach that you want to keep in mind is the big picture. A situation where young people are going to make mistakes. They just are. I know when I was that age, I made more than my fair share.
Tony, we made a lot of mistakes together. We were much older than that.
Yes, still this way, make bad decisions and make mistakes. And so, it's just one of those things where you have to be patient and look at the long-term picture and try to help your guys, learn from it. I talk a lot with our guys, in our business, and we were talking about this earlier, it's not win or lose. I tell our guys all the time, it's win or learn. And when bad things happen, they've always been my best learning points have when bad things have happened. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been the successful ones. So don't get me wrong, I learned from them. But at the same time, the ones that really kind of, gut punches, if you will, they kick you in the shins, they really kind of sting. Those are the ones that I could probably learn the most from. And so just long-term picture and help them grow as young men and hopefully, or young women as well, hopefully, they become a better version of themselves. And it's not just about making them better basketball players, it's about making them better people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that you have to be upfront and honest about, what's going on, how it is. Let's say it's an injury. All right. Hey, look, Frank tore his ACL and it's going to be a big loss for us. I mean, we're going to have to do some things differently here without a doubt. Frank, we all know that Frank was a big part of our team here and it's going to be different. I think you confront it head on. Or, hey, we've got a discipline issue with Frank. We're not going to talk about it. We can't go into detail with it, but Frank's not going to be with us for an undetermined amount of time right now. We're moving forward from it. And I think that when you attack those things head on and you discuss it in that manner, I think that is just really, really a really, really important way to handle it. That's the way. For better or worse, that's the way I chose to handle it, Tony. I don't know how you handled those type of situations, but that's the way I kind of handled those things really head on. And hey, it's just the way it is. We got to figure it out.
Yeah. And, I always go back to when Carlos Boozer was at Duke and he got his season ending injury and Krzyzewski said, hey, if you trust me, we can still win the national championship. And they did. And I'm not saying that, that big injuries and that's going to turn your season around positively. That's not what I'm saying. But sometimes if you can reframe it and help them through that process, and kind of spin it. Like we played a team yesterday, their best player didn't play. And, I'm sure my guys, we played him the first time he played, he had 19. I'm sure my guys, a little bit of the first half, while we were maybe a little bit sluggish, was we thought the game was going to be easy because he wasn't playing. But kudos to their coach, did a great job. They were very motivated, very inspired, and they were up at halftime on us. We were fortunate enough to come back and get them in the second half. But yeah, sometimes it's just how you reframe the message a little bit, just with perspective.
Oh. Coaches, I am really excited to announce this year's lineup for our 5th annual Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic date is Saturday, April the 12th. It's going to take place at Mary R. Queen Gymnasium, located at 3405 South 119th Street here in Omaha. We've got three on-court demonstrators. Andy King, the head boys basketball coach at Elkhorn North High School, will get the day started with his clinic on developing your team through 5-on-5 controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer, my good friend from Iowa State University, the associate head coach at Iowa State with the women's basketball team, is going to talk about individual player development in small group settings. Jamie Smith, the head girls basketball coach at Solon High School in Iowa, one of the best I've ever seen, teach about shooting fundamentals, is going to talk to us about how to put together a great shooting workout for your players. Coach Smith won a state championship last year at the Class 3A level in Iowa. Those are three on-court demonstrators. Then we're going to have three off-court demonstrators. Our lunch keynote speaker is my guy, Raz Vanderloo, the head boys basketball coach at Sioux City East High School. And also, Raz is very involved with USA Basketball. I'm just going to let Raz cook. He's going to talk to us just with a basketball smorgasbord of topics about what Raz wants to talk about that day. Then we're going to have two smaller breakout sessions. Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in high school, highly successful program. He's also an administrator, and he's going to talk about coaching through an administrator's eyes along with some other things. Our other breakout session is weekday Wade Coulter, the head girls basketball coach at Gretna East High School, and he's going to talk about building a pressure defensive system. One of the great things about the Pen and a Napkin Clinic is, in addition to our presenters, we also have two designated breakout sessions where you will get the opportunity to discuss various topics with other coaches attending the clinic. These sessions are a great way to pick the brains of your peers at the clinic, and it's one of the most enjoyable points of our annual clinic. And then, hey, after a long day of learning about hoops, it's time to kick back and relax. We're going to have an optional post-clinic social at Wine 121. It's right down the street from Mary R. Queen, about a mile, mile and a half down the road. I want to thank my friend TK, Tom Crable, for opening his doors to the clinic again. It's just $15 per coach for anybody that wants to join us there. Our Pen and a Napkin Clinic is one of the most affordable clinics in America. I mean, it is really, really, really affordable. You're going to get over 7 hours worth of information. That's $60 for a coach. If you're just a singular coach that wants to come up and check it out, it's $60 a coach. If you bring yourself and another coach from your staff, it's $110. Three coaches from your staff, $150. If you bring four or more coaches from your staff, it is only $45 per coach. We've got a sliding scale. It's all about getting better at an affordable price. So if you are interested in signing up for our Pen and a Napkin Clinic, look to the flyer on Twitter and mail it in. You can scan it in. You can do all those different things, or you can DM me on Twitter, or you can email me penandanapkin@gmail.com. Registrations are due by Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Coaches, do not miss out on one of the best coaching clinics in America. Well, I think that's my, you know, next big point, Tony. You got to have a point, or you got to have a plan. Hey, Frank tore his ACL. He's out for the year, or whatever the scenario may be. Okay, here's what we're going to do. You're talking about that Krzyzewski situation with Carlos Boozer, or he had that other run when he won with Okafor and Justice Winslow, and he's like, all right, eight's enough, because they had a couple injuries and they were down to like eight scholarship guys or something like that. But he kept saying, you know, eight is enough. You know, what is your plan? And you got to have confidence in that plan. This is, you're selling the program 24/7, 365. But when inevitably these disruptions happen, you've got to walk into that locker room. You've got to stand in front of your team and you've got to say, you know, Frank's out. Here's how we're going to do things a little bit differently, or maybe you're not going to do anything differently. Just everybody's got to step up a little bit, whatever you decide to do as a coach, whatever is best for your team. But I think that, what is that play? Your players need to know as soon as possible how we as a coaching staff are going to get this figured out for us so that we can have as good a season, as good as experience as we possibly can. And I think that's a big, that was another one on my list, Tony.
Yeah, I mean, when you take a look at it, I remember Iowa football, I think they're like their 6th, 7th, 8th string tailback. And I can't remember how many years ago that was now, but their motto was next man in. And sometimes it's spinning it like that, like, hey, Frank or whoever is hurt, next player up. We're not going to miss a beat. We're going to keep going. And sometimes it's about adjusting, like with Krzyzewski. You know, you talked about the fact with Boozer, they just went super hyper fast. They changed their style of play, shot a lot of threes, played a lot faster than what they're doing. But like you said, you just have to put the cards on the table. This is what we're going to do now. And it might be where you sit down with your staff. It might be where you console somebody else who's gone through it. But you've got to come up with a plan or a motto, you know, next man up, change the style of play, whatever the case may be. But you have to have something going forward to share with your players so that they know what direction you're going and they know what the plan is going to be in place. And you have to be kind of a used car salesman with them a little bit, where you can get them to buy in that, hey, we're going to be okay here. You know, the style of play is going to fit what this group does, or the next guy in. They already split minutes already. This player is going to play a little bit more, and I think that they're ready for a larger role.
Mm-hmm. What else you got, buddy?
You know, I think another thing that you take a look at with that whole thing as well is just stay resilient. You know, because there are things that you can't control. Like, you can't control injury. You can't control illness. There are things that are outside of your scope and sequence that you can control. So you have to stay resilient. And part of that is going back to, hey, what can we control? Mm. We can control our attitude. You know, we've got to get our doubters down here. We can stay positive. You know, and I like I mentioned yesterday with the team that we were playing, I give their coach a ton of credit, because that's what I kept hearing from the bench. Hey, stay positive, have fun, let's keep going. You know, you can control that attitude, and that's huge. And then the other thing as well, you can control your effort. You know, and one of the things I thought that they did that was a lot better than us in the first half is that they played harder than what we did. And, you know, and I tell our kids all the time, I think 70% of the time, regardless of talent level, the team that plays harder wins. And, you know, it was sometimes about getting on the floor for a loose ball. Sometimes it's about being relentless on the offensive glass. But control the controllables, your attitude and your effort. And as long as you do those things, you're going to be okay. But to stay resilient. And I think that's something that with today's kids, sometimes they miss out on that message, because we want it to be easy. And when life isn't easy, we want to throw our hands up in the air and give up. And that's not what's going to happen. You know, that old Dwayne Wade commercial, you know, get knocked down 7 times, get up 8.
Yeah.
I never quite mapped that out. But
well, every time you get knocked down, you get back up again. They're never going to keep you down, because chumbawamba. So got me through a couple weekend nights back at the Harvard of the Heartland, so and maybe a couple weekday nights as well, but anyway, that's not for details. So resilience, I agree, and I think one of the ways that you can help with that resilience, Tony, and I agree with you with that, you know, that's the selling point of athletics. Life is not going to go perfectly. You're, you know, not everything is going to be exactly the way that you want it to be, you know, on down the line. And I think you can help with that resilience. And again, let's go back to that Coach K example, playing to your team's strengths. You know, like you said, Boozer goes out with the broken foot right around 2003, whenever it was. And now, okay, we're going to play really fast, because that's what we have. We have Jason Williams. We have, Mike Dunleavy Jr. was basically kind of a pseudo five. You know, they basically went like five out, whatever. And you've got to tweak your system to fit those strengths of your players, and have them continue to be resilient, have them continue to, be able to sell it. And when you are playing to your players' strengths, and sometimes that change is even more drastic. Hey, without Frank, you know, we played about 95% man and about 5% zone. Well, guess what? We're probably going to go more like 50-50, because without Frank and this, we've got to kind of pack it in. We've got to do this. We're going to put Billy in for him, and Billy's more of a zone guy, and we just think this will be better, you know? So I think that adjusting to your players' strengths there helps with their ability to stay resilient, because that gives them confidence, because you're telling them, hey, we are going to change this to make this fit you better than it did when Frank was in. And poor Frank's getting beat up here today. Sorry, Frank, wherever you are.
Yeah. And, you know, some of that is just talking about setbacks and the opportunities. And, you know, there are injuries, there are disruptions, there are whatever. And so as that happens, you just reframe it. Now, hey, here's an opportunity for this person now, or here's an opportunity for us to do this now, because, you know, maybe the player that's injured or suspended or whatever, maybe they were your dominant post player. Now you're going to open things up for your guards a little bit more and, you know, play to their strengths and kind of change some things. But, you know, just reframing it, and a setback is an opportunity for someone else or for some other different type of strategy that maybe can unblock and help them still be successful.
Mm-hmm. What else you got, buddy?
You know, another thing to take a look at with them too during that time, you know, get into those small victories. You know, if you all the time take a look at the big picture and you're, you know, looking down the road and there's this huge elephant in front of you, you know, you've got to make it into more manageable bite-sized chunks where you take a look at the fact that, hey, we're going to find some small wins here, you know, like, hey, let's win the next 4 minutes. All right. Or our goal tonight is to have less than 15 turnovers or whatever the case may be, but you've got to go through and take a look at those small wins and celebrate those things as well so that they understand that small wins matter as well. It's not always about, hey, we're playing for a conference championship and that's 10 games on the road. It's about winning that quarter or that 4 minute segment, or, you know, hey, we're going to set a goal tonight. We want over 10 offensive rebounds. Mm. And so you have to celebrate those things, because to me, offensive rebounding always screams effort. And if you're getting over 10 of those things, your kids played with maximum effort. And that's something that you can celebrate with them after the game is over.
Yeah. I kind of had to, it's like we're reading each other's minds here, Tony. You know, give them a pathway through tangible but realistic goals. Like you said, you know, I love how you brought that up there. If we get 10 or more offensive rebounds in a game, we're going to be in a great place. And, you know, that's an effort thing. That's a controllable thing. That's a tangible thing. That's a realistic thing. Again, depending on the talents of your kids. If you've got a bunch of 5'10" kids, maybe it's not so much we've got to get 10 offensive rebounds a game, but maybe you change it to where, you know, Frank, again, let's pick on Frank. It was 6'6" Frank with a bunch of 5'10" guys. All right, now we need to get 12 steals a game and really pick up that tempo or whatever, you know, but again, giving your team that pathway to overcome that disruption through tangible and realistic goals. I really think, Tony, another thing, and it depends on the disruption. If it's an injury thing, but with most of these, once we address it, it's over with. We put it behind us. Hey, Frank's hurt. We move on. We can't just sit there and go, well, what if Frank was here? What if Frank wouldn't have got caught cheating on the geometry test or whatever it may be? We are going to get away from this. This is where we are. This is the situation that we're in. We move forward, and you isolate the team from the disruption. You don't bring up I think you're allowed to bring up, you should bring up the disruption once, maybe twice in the first day or two. But then after that, we know the plan. We know what we need to do. We know we got to get 10 offensive rebounds a game, but you move on. You move on from it, and you got to figure it out, as Belichick would say. I'm sorry, not Belichick. Sorry, got my old coaches or my seasoned and experienced coaches mixed up. That's a Don Meyer thing. You got to figure it out. So you address it, you put it out there. Here's the plan, and now you don't bring it up, because if you kind of keep doing that, if you kind of keep looking in the rearview mirror, that's all you're going to be doing is looking into that rearview mirror.
Yeah, it's kind of like a millstone around your neck. I mean, like you said, you address it. You feel like you've done a thorough job with it. You maybe bring it up that day, maybe the next day, but then you're going forward. You're not continuing to bring it up. Oh, woe is me. If we only had him, we would have won this game. Not necessarily being disrespectful to the those that you have behind. In a way, it kind of is. You know, if you keep bringing him up all the time, you've got to allow them to move on.
Yeah.
And I don't think if you keep bringing that up, obviously that's not what's going on, and it's not what's healthy for your team. And you need to let it go and move on to the. You know, we talk all the time about moving on to the next play, right?
Yep.
And so with that as a coach, sometimes you have to move on to the next game, to the lineup that you have. You've got to keep going forward.
And I think one of the things, I don't know if you've ever had this before, Tony, let's say you have a kid that has what I call a traumatic injury, an ACL, you know, that's probably the most common one in our sport. You also have to explain, because I had a player or two who, when that injury happened to them early in the year, they, you know, moms or dads or, you know, the player would say, gosh, it's, a month or two later, they'd be like, well, you're acting like, you know, I don't even matter. It's like, no, you still matter. I still care for you. I still think you're a great person and a great kid. And this stinks for everybody, and especially you. But I can't sit there and continually talk about you or do this or that, because if we do that, all we're doing is looking in the rearview mirror. And so I think you have to have, especially when you're dealing with traumatic injuries like that, Tony, I think you have to explain that to the player, to the parents, that, hey, this really stinks, that's type of thing. But I hope you understand that. As the coach here, as the coach of the program, we can't sit here and dwell on it. We can't, you know, hem and haw over it forever and ever. As a group, we kind of have to move on from this. And I know that's unfair to you as a human being, but I've got to do what's best for the team.
I think you can involve them in other ways.
Absolutely.
Maybe they sit up by the coaching staff, you know, and then at timeouts, whoever replaced them or their position group, they talk to them.
Yeah.
And so I think you can still, you know, have them involved just in different ways. And so I think those are other items to kind of keep in mind with that one too.
Yeah. I've got one more, Tony. What do you got, buddy?
I've got one or two more as well. The first one I would go with would be this. Is the whole rest and recovery thing. You mentioned earlier when they had the issue at Duke and they had the eight is enough was what Krzyzewski's phrase was. You know, you might have to adjust some things, like with the whole rest and recovery thing with your team. Mm-hmm. You know, rather than, you know, running them into the ground and going 2-hour practices, 90 minutes might be where you go for a while. And if they're out for the rest of the year, maybe that's where you keep it at, 75 to 90 minutes as you go through and navigate that portion of the year. Or if they're going to come back, maybe you adjust it to an hour and a half for a few weeks, and then once they come back, maybe you look at it up another 15 minutes after that once they're back, to kind of help them with conditioning and knocking the rust off. But you know, I think the whole rest and recovery thing, both physically and mentally, when you lose them, I think sometimes that can be underappreciated too.
There was a deal, I don't know if you heard Mike Nabors tell this story, Tony, or read the article that he wrote. One of the years at Washington, they were just so absolutely beat up. They only practiced as a team twice a week. So this was back in the old, there was a conference once upon a time, boys and girls, called the Pac-12. And they played a lot of Thursday, Saturday games. And so let's say they're practicing, or they played Thursday, Saturday. They would practice as a team Wednesday to play Thursday. They would practice as a team Friday to play Saturday. Sunday and Monday were days off, physical therapy, rest. Tuesday, players would come in for about a half hour to 45 minutes of skill development, because they were just so beat up that, and even those team practices weren't much of team practices. It was, you know, day before game, pre-game walkthroughs. And they had to get really, really creative with the disruptions that they had faced during that season. And he said, we ended up finishing really, really strong. When I first pitched that schedule to the team, they thought I was crazy. What do you mean we're not practicing 2 days a week? What do you mean we're only practicing as a team 2 days a week? This is nuts. This goes against everything. But it turned out to be the right thing, because like you said, they needed that rest, that recovery. And with the players that they had left, and some of them were playing through injuries that they couldn't possibly traditionally practice the way that they were, that you normally would in a traditional manner. So I think that's a great point as well, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you have to adjust and do the best with what you have, and desperate measures. Sometimes you have to put in place desperate plans.
Yep. My last point, Tony, that I've got, and if you got anything after this, by all means, chuck it out there, obviously. I think as coaches, it's going to take time. If you lose a piece of the formula, a big piece of the formula, it's going to take time. You're going to have to be patient. You're going to have the players adjust to their new roles. Most teams, if you lose a big piece of the cog here, you take a look again. This is an easy example for me to talk about, being a local story. Coach McDermott at Creighton here, they lost their two guard who had 27, 29 points or whatever against Kansas. Yeah, that Isaac's kid. And it took them a while to figure it out, but now basically they start a point guard who basically never comes off the floor. They're playing their three at the two. They're starting and rotating in three or four guys that are fours that at the three and four spot, and then Kalkbrenner is another guy that never comes off the floor. And they've won 8 out of 9 or 7 out of 8 or some crazy number like that. That took time for Coach McDermott and his staff to figure that out. So I think when those things happen, you've got to allow your players time to fit into those new roles, new ideas, new different things like that.
Yeah, you know, you've always heard the phrase before, obviously, Rome wasn't built in a day. And when you shift gears, you change lanes, however you want to term it, it's going to take a little bit of time. But like you said, the story that you have right there in your own backyard with Creighton and what Coach McDermott and their staff has done, it's a great thing. Because Creighton, after the injury happened, probably were in danger of falling out of the NCAA tournament. And right now, they're obviously squarely in with both feet.
Yeah. Yep. You got anything else, buddy?
Yeah. The other thing I would throw out there that sometimes is helpful with this type of stuff too, use your alums, in my situation, I just, juniors and seniors that played for me. Sometimes it might be guys that graduated and played for me several years ago, but use them when these things happen, because they might have had similar experiences coming back from an injury, been a part of a team that had, some suspensions or whatever, and how they adjusted. But use them too, because I think it always means something from somebody who used to be in their spot that wore their shoes, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think anytime you can get your alums involved with things, I think that's such a positive. That's a positive thing. And we did stuff. We did a podcast about a month ago, probably on, building your alumni network and putting that together. So, anytime you can get your alums involved, Tony, it's obviously a very, very positive thing. Coaches, are you looking for a way to improve not only your players, but your parents' perspectives on what they should expect when they come to your program at the high school level? Well, A Pen and a Napkin has something for you, your families, your players, your parents, and maybe even yourself as well. Varsity Preparation Academy, the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, is going to take place May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska, at Omaha Marion High School. That's at 7400 Military Avenue here in Omaha. This is for girls basketball players, grades 6 through 9, going into the 25-26 school year. VPA is all about educating parents and players to prepare themselves for the varsity sports experience, both on and off the floor. I'm taking all the things that I've learned in my career from all the camps that I've gone to, all the camps that I've worked, all the stuff that I've done on my own here, from USA Basketball to Snow Valley to Point Guard College to the stuff that I've done, and we're combining it all into one really, really intense weekend to help these future varsity athletes get ready for the varsity level. We're going to work on skill sessions on the floor. We're going to have many sessions on the floor talking about important things about like why coaches substitute, the importance of routine, different things like that. And then we're going to have classroom sessions where we're going to sit down and talk about different things that are going to be important for the development of the player and the parent. We're also going to have a parent meeting to talk to parents about what to expect in the high school experience, what they should be looking for as the as their child goes through this. So coaches, pass this on to your players, to your parents. I think it's going to be a really, really good deal. It's $175 for the weekend. That's literally less than $10 an hour that they're going to pay to get this great experience, t-shirts, binders for note-taking, all sorts of different things. Meals are going to be provided. We are going to take care of your players and your parents. A pen and a napkin is going to be there to help you out. Always done that, and we're going to do this once again on a different wavelength, on a different level, with the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska. Well, Tony, you know who is always ready to give a helping hand to those that come after them.
Even if it's a benefit concert in Europe.
It is. I think they played Fire Aid. I'm pretty sure that they were one of the acts in there, though, Tony. So it is time for the coaching staff trivia here. Mr. Viss, are you ready for this trivia question?
Let's try her.
Okay. And I'm very well aware. I've got a hint, at least one hint, ready to go for you here. So,
okay.
I did see earlier this week ESPN. Signed a contract or signed a continuation of a contract, whatever. They are going to be televising ACC games for college basketball through 2036, Tony. And the big reason, one of the big reasons why the sport grew by leaps and bounds in the 80s when we were youngsters was because of ESPN. Here's my question for you here, Tony. In December of 1979, ESPN broadcast their first college basketball game. Who was it between? Now, I'll give you a hint. One team is now in the Big East. One team is in the Big Ten, and they share a border with each other. The states. They're from two different states.
Oh, two different states. Shoot, I was going to say Pitt and Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh and Penn State, but obviously they're in the same state.
Two different states. Probably about, I would say, 200 miles away from each other. So relatively close.
I'm going to guess Virginia and Maryland.
Incorrect. I'll give you another hint. One is a Catholic school, one is a public school.
Hey.
Big East and Big Ten.
Georgetown, Maryland.
Nope.
They're in the same state, though, dang it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One
yeah.
state is right on top of the other one. This is a hard one. I get it. But I thought maybe you might know this just out of the heck.
I'm not that smart.
Yeah.
It's
in the Midwest, located in the Midwest. Two far states with one big city in each state.
Two far states. One big city.
You need to get out your atlas.
Shoot. I want to say Nebraska and
you're wrong. I'm just going to tell you.
All right. Thank you. Just get out of my misery.
Yeah. DePaul defeated Wisconsin. DePaul defeated Wisconsin.
Never got that in a million years.
Yeah, that's okay. That was probably not fair. Do you know who the color commentator on that game was?
Dickie V.
Dickie V was the color commentator. And Mel Allen said,
"Oh, about that.
Yes, he did. Tony, I don't know if you heard or not. There was a trade in the NBA last night.
Huh. Yeah. Was it the PJ Tucker one?
Yeah, it was PJ Tucker to the Utah Jazz, Soft J. Yes, that was the one I was talking about. We had a bunch of stuff lined up here. And then thank you, Rob Palinka and Nico Harris, for blowing up our previous plans. And if we get to that point, then we can get to that, But wow, Tony, Michael Plum about midnight last night all of a sudden started screaming, "Luka got traded! Luka got traded!" I'm like, oh my God,
Garza?
Yeah, Luka Garza. Yeah, exactly. Not Luka Garza, no. Luka Doncic. We've had about 18 hours or so to digest this, Tony. Your thoughts, buddy?
The first thing that jumps out is I think Luka must have made somebody mad, because you take a look at this. Luka's 25, right?
Yeah.
And AD's 31. And if you go through and take a look, Luka was pretty close to being able to sign an extension. And now after getting traded, he's not eligible for the Supermax. And I don't know. I think he might have rubbed some people the wrong way with injuries and being overweight, maybe commitment to defense and so on and so forth. But yeah, I mean, it shocks me. I was reading something about the Mavericks calling up the Lakers. Hey, we'd like AD. And the Lakers' response back was he's untouchable. And then the Mavericks said, "Well, we're going to trade him for Luka Doncic," and they said back, "He'll be there in the morning." and so you go through that, and you just wonder what happened, because I would say if I were to name a handful of guys that were untouchable in the NBA, I would have said Luka Doncic was one of those five guys. And this one, I'm a little bit perplexed on, as far as things go. And I thought for a minute there might be another shoe that falls as far as the whole thing. Maybe LeBron's going to waive his. He's going to go somewhere too. But I saw on ESPN, and obviously you don't believe everything you read on the internet, but that he won't be moved. And so we'll see what happens here.
I think... I listened to a couple of podcasts in preparation for this topic. I think that Luka and AD, I think in their own way, and maybe not with AD as far as him personally, but Clutch, I think they're just got tired of dealing with baloney. There's other words I could use, but this is a PG-13 podcast. I think Luka, he can be a really immature player on the floor. He's always griping at the officials. We've seen his lack of effort at times on the defensive end. Now, the ball in his hands, he is a maestro. He is an absolute maestro. But when, just as well as I do, Tony, we deal with it with decent high school players from time to time who... their personalities are very difficult to be with because they have been quote unquote coddled from an early age. And these are kids that are going to be NAIA or Division II players. I would imagine that things got to a point between his quote unquote lack of conditioning, perhaps some of his personal habits. Did you ever see the clip of, what's the guy's name? Michael Finley taking the beer out of Luka's hands. I think this is the third or fourth time that he's strained his calf. He hasn't played in 5 or 6 weeks, and those soft tissue injuries a lot of times, not all the time, Tony, but a lot of times those are due to lack of taking care of your body. And I think the Mavericks said, he is immensely talented. He is unbelievable. But at what point are you going to kind of grow up a little bit? Now, is that necessarily fair to a 25-year-old? Probably not, because I make mistakes every day as a 51-year-old, let alone when I was 25. But I also wasn't going to potentially get paid $345 million. And my guess is over the next few days, I think we're going to, as they say, the reporters are going to empty their notebooks and, I think some stuff about Luka, his personality, his temperament, stuff that has been kind of tucked away for a while, may be put out into the open here. That's my hypothesis. Am I off? Am I on? Could I be on, Tony? What do you think?
I think you're on. You know, they talked about when he came back for like training camp stuff, he was in better shape than previously. And then, early in the season, he kind of ballooned up to 260 pounds, and they said he had like a wrist sprain or something like that, and he was working on his conditioning. And that wasn't the first time that it happened. You know, and when your GM is bringing up the C word, culture, you know, it's about culture, it's about culture. And they asked him, as far as, you know, what are you saying here with Luka? Did he not fit the culture? He goes, I'm not going to say a bad thing about any player. And they just kind of moved on from there. And so, yeah, I think you're going to hear some stuff about him. But it's one of those things where you're going to go play with the players had the greatest career of all time, LeBron James.
Yeah.
And LeBron obviously does some stuff to really take care of his body and stuff like that. And I think this is, I don't know if I would just like call it his last chance, but this is a chance for him to come to a realization. You know, at 25, he's going to start to take some things seriously. Because here's the thing. If you told me that Luka was going to be a top 3 to 5 player in the NBA for the next 5 years, I would believe you. If you told me Luka was going to be a top player in the NBA for the next 10 years, I would tell you you're crazy. And that goes back to the way he takes care of himself and his lack of commitment to defense and taking care of his body and so on and so forth. And so here's the thing, as you go to a guy who's like ultra takes care of himself and you see what he's done with his career because of that, this is going to be a very, very important time for Luka. And I think the other thing too, not that Jason Kidd didn't have Luka's respect, but if I remember correctly, I think JJ actually played with him. And so I think there will be some respect there too. And I think those guys, LeBron and JJ, if they can't reach him, you know, as far as doing some things differently from a take care of yourself standpoint, I don't know if it's going to be possible.
Do you think, Tony, that, you know, how is this going to work between LeBron and Luka? How do you make it work?
That's the sort that I kind of wonder a little bit, to be honest with you, Marty, because they're kind of the same spot. Not that LeBron can't play everywhere, but they're kind of the same spot, and they're both like to have the ball in their hands. But I think LeBron's at a point in time in his career where he realizes, at the age that he's at, he probably needs to be that second option now, not the first one, but the ego sometimes still wants to be the first one. But Luka hasn't played for over a month.
Yeah.
And so obviously, you know, you're talking about conditioning and taking care of your body. There's going to be some stuff there, but the rumor is that he's planning to be back out there before the All-Star break, which they're getting really, really close to. You know, when I take a look at Dallas, you know, AD gives them a defensive mentality. AD, when he was with the Lakers, kept talking about the Lakers needed a center, and they got two of them as he goes to Dallas. And so I think you'll see maybe a really good fit there, but they're going to miss him, but they still have Kyrie. And so it will be interesting to see the directions these two teams go, because the Lakers had just knocked off New York last night, and I don't think Anthony Davis had played the last two games, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But it could be a win-win for both teams. It really could be.
Yeah. And Anthony Davis, you know, his lack of health is well documented in basketball circles. He has been frail at times in his career. Now, last year he played over 70 games. I don't remember the exact number. This year he's been fairly healthy, minus these last two or three games that they've had. I think the quote unquote fit, like, I LeBron's going to have, this is going to be interesting. I will just say this. I've got a student teacher right now, and I know that I've got to start shutting up and letting him take control. But guess what? When it gets down to brass tacks, am I still kind of interrupting him once or twice a day to put in my 2 cents worth on a lesson plan in front of the kids? Yeah. You know why? Because it's hard for me, who's been doing this for a while, to let go of that. So LeBron may think that. I think it's going to be hard for him to do. Not to say that it's impossible. He's extreme. The basketball IQ, the Lakers, if you are Dalton Connect, you are just literally going to be playing a horse game for the next 3 months. And if you're Austin Reeves, you're going to be playing a horse game for the next 3 months. Now, you're going to have to score 130 a game because I don't know how they're going to get any stops because Reeves is not great on defense. Connect is a rookie. LeBron is diminished in his defensive ability. Luka has never really shown it. So, you know, they're going to have to score 120, 125, 130. You have to make the trade if you're the Lakers. I don't think I will disagree with you. I think that if you said 10 years from now, Luka's still one of the 3 to 5 best players in the league, I could definitely see that because he just plays at a slow pace and calf muscle strains behind, you know, on top of or take it away, his game, kind of like Jokic's, his game is conducive to playing in a long, long career more so than, I don't know, just random guy like Amare Stoudemire or somebody who depends a lot more on their athleticism, their springiness, that type of a thing. So is this the biggest trade in NBA history, Tony?
I don't know on that. Would I say the most surprising? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would say it's the biggest because there was no like rumblings and then all of a sudden it just went down.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with you there. Without a doubt, I think you could easily say it's the most surprising NBA trade because nobody saw this coming. There it just happened. And I think if any trade was going to break the internet, this might be one of them. And I really think I think this will go down as and we need time to look at it, you know, 5-10 years to really look at this. And it could very well be a win-win trade for both franchises as well. You could see that playing out. But it is amazing how these guys just end up in Los Angeles in purple and gold, and they just happen to go there in the prime of their career. It's one of those deals. You're going to remember, if you're a basketball nerd, you're going to remember where you were when you heard about the Luka Doncic trade.
Yes. And, you know, when I got on ESPN this morning, I saw, you know, the thing, and I didn't really look at it that closely. I was looking at something else. Then I went back over and I clicked on it. I was like, oh. So, yeah, I mean, it was so, so surprising. I like I said, I just thought Luka Doncic was one of those guys who was untouchable, and I don't know if it would have had 80 in that conversation, but he was in that area code.
Mm-hmm. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Well, Tony, we had some other things to talk about, let's fast forward. You know, I got a feeling we'll talk about Jimmy Butler and De'Aaron Fox probably next week's pod, so we'll set that aside. Quote unquote, the biggest ever. Brittany Griner signing with the Atlanta Dream. Is that the WNBA's biggest free agent signing ever? Kind of. And that one's another one just out of left field.
Yeah, it was. And then Breonna Jones, who plays basically the same position, also signed there too. And so you know, Connecticut Sun have kind of blown that thing up. And it's been a lot of movement in the WNBA. That was one of the things I would say with the WNBA, that where they were lagging behind like the NBA is like all these free agent moves and trade. And all of a sudden over the past few days, it's like, oh boy. So yeah, they have caught up.
Yeah. You know, Breonna Jones, like you said, going there. Also, speaking of the Sun blowing it up, Alyssa Thomas traded to Phoenix to fill in that starting role. Again, much different players. But Alyssa Thomas, one of the 5 to 7 best players in the league, going to Phoenix here. So massive amount of movement here in the league as well, Tony. I mean, you know, just what do you think of the Thomas deal?
The Thomas deal, like you said, she's a really, really good player. And I think what Phoenix is trying to do is put her in that Draymond Green role, yep, if you will, and put shooters around her and trying to have that style of play morph into the WNBA and see how it does.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then Kim Caldwell, 1 week after having a child, she is back on the sideline. Wow. That is toughness personified. You know, it is a bit of a it's definitely different in that regard. I respect her for doing that. You know, as long as she can manage it in her personal life and the way that she's coaching her team, by all means, that's her decision. That's her family's decision. I don't think she deserves any criticism for making that decision. As long as she's healthy, as long as her child is healthy, if she feels like that's appropriate, I think she should go out there and coach. How about you, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, if people sit back and second guess her, I mean, you have to be in her shoes. You know, and I remember Coach Krzyzewski talking to his players about being tough like their moms. And this is a lady who I think Tennessee got right, you know, as far as being the one that will take them back to the peak of the college women's basketball. I just really am impressed with her.
Yep. Tony, I got one final question for you here. Who's moving up? Who's moving down in your world, Tony? Who's moving up for you?
You know, I'm probably in the moment here, but Iowa women knocked off USC today as they retired Caitlin Clark's jersey. But just kudos to them. A really young team. That's a big win on their resume. So I'm going to go with the Iowa women as my moving up.
Yeah, knocking off Juju Watkins. I think that was USC's only second loss of the year.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame was their first one, if I remember correctly. And this is their first Big Ten loss.
Yeah, so, and it was a huge day in Iowa City, retiring Caitlin Clark's jersey. And, you know, so that makes it extra special for the Iowa fans and everybody around it. And you know, Juju Watkins very well could be that next person that takes the baton from Caitlin Clark, whether it's her or Hidalgo or whomever it may be. The WNBA is just going to get better and better and better with these young players that are developing in the college game. And we haven't even talked about some of the international players as well. So great win for Iowa. Carver Hawkeye, always a tough place for women's teams to go in and play at. So my team moving up here is on the men's side of things, staying in the college game, despite their loss yesterday, University of Houston Cougars. Winners before that, they had kind of fallen out of the radar. They started off a little bit slower than they normally do, but they had won 13 games in a row and were undefeated in the Big 12 until they lost yesterday to Texas Tech. You know, Kelvin Sampson, one of the best in the country at what he does, developing a team, making them better. And they you know, they didn't lose to slouches. Auburn in a neutral court game, Alabama, they lost to a good San Diego State team in overtime. They lost another game to Texas Tech in overtime. So 3 of their 4 losses are in overtime. So it's not like they haven't, you know, been playing good basketball all season long, but they have really, really hit their stride here the last couple of months.
Yeah, you know, and the only thing I would go with yesterday, Texas Tech had a player get ejected. Toppin, who was a leading scorer, and their coach was pretty incensed by it, and he also got ejected. So kudos to Texas Tech for stopping their win streak and beating them in Houston.
Yep. Tony, who you down on?
I'm going to stay in the state, Marty. I'm going to stay in men's basketball. Iowa State men, I've lost a couple in a row, got their 29-game home court winning streak stopped yesterday by the Kansas State Wildcats. So a little bit of rocky times there in Ames. I'm sure Coach Otts and his staff will get them back on track, but they go to Lawrence here, I believe, tomorrow night.
Little bit of a hangover, do you think, over the Caleb Love 60-footer when they thought they had the Arizona game won, Tony?
Potentially, but maybe started off hot yesterday, and then all of a sudden the wheels came off the thing. Kansas State, who normally doesn't shoot the ball well from three, shot 50% from three. And so, yeah, I just there's something going on. Obviously, they lost their starter, who was their best shooter, Chilovich, I think it's how you see it anyway, but he's still a few weeks away from coming back yet. So they've got to get the ship righted here because it's dog eat dog in that tough Big 12.
Yeah. You know, disruptions, you know, and they've got to navigate that here and they'll get it figured out without a doubt. So, and Kansas State had expectations coming into the season. I had them on a couple of weeks ago. I had them. I was down on them because they were 1-8, 1-7 in the Big 12 at that point. You know, so I think everybody was pretty stunned just by, you know, if you take a look at the records, this should not have been a competitive game. But then Kansas State goes in there and rolls them. But it wasn't like Kansas State didn't have expectations coming into the season. So I forgot, Tony. I wanted to throw in one more honorable mention for the Who's Up, if that's all right with you, my friend.
Yeah.
Here, local story, and they don't get a lot of shine because they are often the number one story when it comes to basketball season around here in Omaha is Creighton, and second, especially when they're good, is Nebraska, and then they're like, oh yeah, we have another Division I team in this little 45-minute radius here, and that is Nebraska-Omaha, or is they're technically just supposed to be Omaha. They have won, doing some math here, Tony, 9 out of their last 10, and they are number one in the Summit League. I'm talking the men's side of things here, and they've become a bit of a viral sensation with the celebration of destroying a trash can at the end of every victory. One of their assistant coaches did the people's elbow on a trash can yesterday after their win against Denver, and it's Omaha is a great school. A lot of people don't know about it here in our city, and so kudos to the Mavericks for going on the big run here and becoming, like I said, a bit of a viral sensation here. So
yes, their celebrations are going viral.
Yep. I am down, Tony. I'm going to go to the NBA here, and I may have used them before, but the Phoenix Suns. And just they might have been in the running here for Luka Doncic if they would have just stayed more patient, but they made that terrible Bradley Beal trade, and Bradley Beal's way better at basketball than me. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that he's a outstanding player, but that short-sightedness and not staying patient, it was an impulse buy, so to speak. You know, when you're walking through the grocery store line and you see the Snickers bar and you know you shouldn't have it, but you can't help yourself, you got to grab it. They're just hanging around at 500. This is a team that's kind of rudderless right now. Yusuf Nurkic isn't talking to Mike Budenholzer. Their solution, quote unquote, to bring in Jimmy Butler. Not so sure that's a good idea. But they've got to have so many different things happen there. You got Kevin Durant, you got Devin Booker. I'm just down on the Phoenix Suns and maybe more notably Matt Ishbia for just kind of, like I said, the new owner syndrome, going after the bright and shiny prize instead of just being basketball smart and making the best deal possible down the line. So that's what I'm down on, Tony.
Understandable. Very understandable.
Yep. Episode 118 in the books here. Tony, surviving disruptions. Any last minute stuff here? Any words of wisdom for surviving disruptions?
Keep the hypothetical plans in place just in case they happen so that you're going from a case of being proactive rather than reactive.
Absolutely. Just great stuff here this week. We got a lot of great things going on. Coaches, don't forget to sign up for the Spring Coaches Clinic, April the 12th here. I know you're headlong into your seasons, but don't forget to get that taken care of. We've got our Varsity Prep Academy coming up in May. Just a lot of really, really good things coming out here. So hope you've enjoyed this podcast. We'll have something else to talk about next week, as always. So for Mr. Tony Devis, coaches, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.